So vitamins, again, this is something I say at the beginning of all my presentations, and I encourage you to do the same as you're working with people and presenting, whether it's one-on-one or in a formal presentation. Some way of saying, I'm not diagnosing you. This isn't medical advice. This is education. I'm educating you about how your body works so that you can make really amazing decisions about how to take care of it. But if you are on any medication, if you are under the care of a medical practitioner, make sure that any changes you make to your diet and lifestyle are in conjunction with that practitioner. Now, we all know that we have patients that do not have a medical practitioner and don't want to have a medical practitioner because they don't want interventions in the medical and surgical realm. That's fine, and that's their decision. But you still have to tell them that you're not diagnosing them and that they need to work with their medical practitioner. It's just, you know, where it goes. You may be able to help them solve all their problems without it, but if they are on medication or under the care, just to cover yourself, you should be telling people. Vitamin D is important in so many things. It needs to be part of a routine exam, even if it's not included when the docs run it. It's telling people that it's an important piece. I don't like supplementing with vitamin D unless I see a lab. And because if I do, I have to be really conservative, and it may not be serving the person to give them a little thimble full of vitamin D when they need a whole truckload of vitamin D. So it's really important with anybody with autoimmune disease. If you have your thyroid cases, you have anybody with rheumatoid arthritis or lupus or any of those Sjogren's, you really need to make sure their D is good because it helps with making the T regulatory cells that keep the body from attacking itself. It's very important. Vitamin D is also important in things like muscle pain, like people who have fibromyalgia. And fibromyalgia isn't a quote-unquote disease per se. It's a syndrome. It's pain that's in those muscles, but there's usually some underlying causes like gut dysbiosis and vitamin and mineral imbalances, autoantibodies, etc. Diabetes, vitamin D is super important for those insulin receptors. You have to have good vitamin D status. Osteoporosis, because vitamin D is what affects how much calcium you're absorbing. It affects the phosphorus levels, that calcium-phosphorus balance in your bones. In cancer, there have been so many studies that have linked vitamin D deficiency to various cancers, the most notable being colon cancer, prostate cancer, and breast cancer. Okay? So those are, it's really important to keep your levels up. There was a couple of studies, and I don't have the studies handy, but a couple of studies showed that cancer rates went down dramatically, almost non-existent, in people that maintained their vitamin D levels in the 90 to 100 range. So the higher, closer you got to 100, the better. Anything above 100 is starting to be too much, but that'll be on the next slide. Neurodegenerative disease, where your nerves are affected and it's causing degeneration and lack of function and loss of use. And depression. And some neurodegenerative diseases, just to give you an idea like that, would be like Parkinson's or Alzheimer's. And then depression. Some of these people who are depressed and they're put on antidepressants, you can put them, get them out in the sun and give them some vitamin D, and they're feeling better. And fatigue. So many people with fatigue, vitamin D deficiency. And when I test people for vitamin D, when I first started doing this several years ago routinely, I was shocked at how low a lot of people were. The range that I like to keep it in, the functional medicine range, is like 70 to 110. If it goes above 110, we're looking at, it's a little bit too high, okay? But 70, below 70, you're looking at being at risk for all of the above that we just discussed. So I like it in that range. There's a lot of research that supports that. And if they go above 110, then I'm starting to say, okay, let's just back it off a little bit. But right around there, especially with autoimmune or cancer. The form that's tested is vitamin D25-hydroxy. It's not vitamin D125. The 125 is extremely, extremely expensive to test. Okay? So the 25 hydroxy, it's like $49. And Jerome, so here's what our vitamin D will look like on our spreadsheet. Let's look at some of the factors. The lab range is 32 to 100. At least they raised it up, but I've seen at 32 people are symptomatic. The optimal range, 75 to 100, I actually think 55 to 100 is listed. I think 70 to 110 would be really important, especially if you have autoimmune disease. Okay, so here's what affects your vitamin D requirement. If you're overweight, you need more. You absorb less. If you have a darker pigmented skin, same thing. You absorb less. Your age. As we age, we make and absorb less vitamin D. Where you live, right? If you live near the equator versus if you live in Canada, make a difference on how much vitamin D you need, how much sun exposure you actually get, and whether you use sunscreen and whether you wash. And chronic illnesses always have play a big role. So we have to look at their digestion, we have to look at their absorption, we have to look at their exposures, we have to look at their genetics. Okay, I'm just going to take 2 minutes to quickly go over this and let you take this away with you. The action plan for vitamin D, you'll see I have different ranges throughout because as I've done research, I've kind of changed my mind about it. But I like to keep it in the close to 100. I like 75 to 100 is a good range. If they're less than 20, I have them take 20,000 every day for up to a month, really up to a month. It's, and the lower it is, sometimes if it's below 10, I even go to 3 months, but I didn't want to give you that as a written protocol. Then I put them to 10,000 for 2 months and then retest. If anybody's willing to test after, you know, quickly, I'll have them do the 20,000 for 6 weeks. And then for if it's between 20 and 30, I have them take 10,000 for 3 months, retest. If it's between 30 and 40, I have them take 6,000 for 3 months and retest. 40 and 60, I have them take 2 to 4,000 and then recheck at 3 months. And if it's 60 or above and they're not taking a vitamin D supplement, then I have them take 1 to 2,000 a day till spring because they're not going to be able to get sun. In the summer also on days that they don't stay out in the sun for 30 minutes, and then they can retest in 4 to 6 months. But people who are live in warm climates get regular sun exposure and their vitamin D is 60 or above without supplementation, I just tell them, check it before the winter. Check it before the winter. So we're going to go into just a little bit about vitamins that you can understand, that you can see on a blood test. There are specialty labs that do vitamin screens. Usually, vitamins just don't show up well in the blood. If you measure the level in the blood, it doesn't really mean much. A lot of people will do that with B12 and folic acid. And while folic acid is a little bit better to do that way, vitamin B12 is not a very useful indication of how active the B12 is in your system. So we're going to show you how to tell your vitamin B12 and folic status. But some of these labs, like magnesium, you need to do a red blood cell magnesium, not a serum, not a plasma magnesium, so it's much more expensive. And there are some labs that do that. And then there's SpectraCell, which does a complete thing. And we'll talk about all of those when we do our functional lab test. We're just doing blood tests, mostly routine blood tests, but some of the specialty things like homocysteine, hemoglobin A1C, et cetera. So on vitamin B12 and folic acid, we've already talked when we talked about anemia as to how you can conjecture that there's a problem with vitamin B12 or folic acid based on MCV being high or MCH or MCHC. Okay? You can also, when the iron is high and those things are high, you can suspect it. It's not a tried and true, but sometimes the iron is high, you can tell. The RDW is high. Definitely there's some sort of anemia going on, and it's suggestive of the B12 folic acid. If your white blood cell counts are low, sometimes that happens. If your red blood cell counts are low, that could be a sign of B12 folic acid. Because B12 and folic acid, remember, their job is to mature the blood cells. So if you have a deficiency in them, you may not see signs change after you've replenished it for a good 3 months because it doesn't reverse what's happening in the blood cells themselves. It's irreversible, the changes that happen to the red blood cells. But the red blood cells, good news, replenish themselves every 3 to 4 months. So these are some of the things that suggest that maybe there's some vitamin B12 and folic acid off. The best way to determine B12 levels is through something called methyl malonic acid. I usually run it in urine, although you can run it in plasma as well. And it's basically a toxic byproduct of faulty B12 metabolism. So if you don't have enough B12 to take this metabolic pathway through to the end, It produces methylmalonic acid, and it's the best way to determine functionally how your B12 is doing. Remember, we want to know functionally. We don't care how much B12 is there. We want to know how is that B12 working. Okay? Now, the other thing you need to keep in mind about B12 and folic acid, they're part of what's called the methylation pathways. And methylation is one of the detox pathways in the liver. It's actually one of the major detox pathways in the liver. And there are doctors who are studying methylation inside out and backwards up and have written whole books on the methylation cycle. And I have one. It's called Genetic Bypass. And it shows the methylation cycle and all the different ways your body can bypass it if you support it in nutritionally. A lot of research being done with autistic children in relationship to B12 and folic acid and the methylation cycle and a whole lot of other things that are methylators. So if you're low in B12 and folic acid, not only do you have immature red blood cells, and not only with folic acid you can get neural tube defects in babies if a pregnant woman is deficient, and not only do you get peripheral neuropathies and some of those horrible, like, you know, schizoid type of things that you can get with B12 deficiencies, you also have problems with your detoxification. It's very sluggish at detoxifying your environment if you don't have enough of these vitamins. Okay? So they're really, really important, and I want to make sure that you're really aware of how to look for them, the deficiencies, and correct for the deficiencies in your clients and patients. Okay? Vitamin B6, again, we don't directly measure vitamin B6 in the serum, but vitamin B6 is an essential coenzyme for many of the liver enzymes. So AST, I know ALT is alanine aminotransferase. You look them up. I don't memorize them. But they're transferase enzymes. They're transferase. They transfer one from one amino acid to another, and they're very important in the role of the liver. Now, if you have high levels of these, it suggests you have liver problems, liver stagnations. If you have low levels, mostly in medical circles, they're ignored. Well, they're just low. It's only a problem if it's high. There is no such thing as low. But if they're low, that means usually that you don't have enough vitamin B6 to have made those. So AST, ALT, GGT, these are all of the enzymes that we'll talk about in a little while when we go through the liver enzymes. Iron high is sometimes an indication of B6, and oftentimes you'll have a high iron and a low hemoglobin. You see that on the other side. High iron, low hemoglobin. And the reason is that B6 is important for taking the iron and putting it into the hemoglobin. And if you don't have enough B6, then you get that what looks kind of odd. Wow, I have low hemoglobin but high iron. What's happening here? Ah, maybe I have a B6 deficiency. Same thing with the hematocrit. Same thing with red blood cells. They can be low when the iron is high. And if you see that pattern of low red blood cells, hematocrit, hemoglobin, or any number of those, high RDW, which suggests anemia, but your iron looks good, but your MCV is low. It's like, what's going on here? Could be a B6 deficiency. So when you start to see these patterns, that's why it's good to have these things spelled out for you so that when you're going through, you can actually go through and look for these patterns. After a while, you start to see them, but the lab assessment analysis sheet, summary analysis sheet, we're going to go through it later. It's just such a lovely summary of everything. You can say, okay, let's see. You can go through the B6 deficiency. You can actually take a person's lab and go through and fill out that form and, you know, mark everything up and then go through and say, they have a lot of signs of B6 deficiency. I better be looking at that. Alkaline phosphatase is low, and that's a sign of B6 deficiency. So let's look at vitamin C. What do you mean vitamin C? You could tell a person's vitamin C status by a blood test? Wow, how does that work? Well, these are just some things that vitamin C is important for preventing anemia. Vitamin C is important for getting the oxygen and the iron and the hemoglobin formed. And if there's some problems with it, then you're not going to have good status. So, wow, I can tell some vitamin C. Is it 100%? No, but you add to this these indicators and you go, oh, this person's really stressed out. Whoa, vitamin C is used up by the adrenals more than anything else. So hematocrit low, alk-phos high in vitamin C deficiency, red blood cells high in vitamin C deficiency, hemoglobin low, hematocrit low, MCV, MCH, and MCHC all high. So if you're thinking, you know, you're seeing MCH, MCV, MCHC high, but you don't think they have a deficiency of folic acid or B12, it could be vitamin C. That's why it's important when you're working with somebody with an anemia problem and an adrenal problem, you make sure that you're supplementing with the foods or the nutrients that have all the cofactors for that. So whenever I would say somebody has anemia, even if it looks like a pure iron deficiency anemia, you need B6 in order for the iron to actually make it into the hemoglobin. You need vitamin C, so I like to give people that well-rounded. And there's several formulas that have that combination. I think the Vitamin Code has one called Raw Iron that has iron and B12 and B6 and folic acid and vitamin C. Might even have zinc. I don't remember.